Welcome, welcome to the Encourage Project. I'm Amy Fairchild, and I am so happy that you are here. Oh my goodness, if you're new, you may not know exactly what we're all about. And so I'll tell you, the Encourage Project is all about showing people what's possible through the power of encouragement. And that means encouraging people in growth, encouraging people in overcoming challenges, in making change, and really being who you are perfectly designed to be. So that's what we're about. And I'm happy that you're here. You can engage with the community. We're on Instagram, the_encourage_project. And we're recording this the day after apparently the bottom fell out of Instagram and Facebook. So hopefully you can find us. It's all back online from what I understand. So yeah, find us on Instagram. And before we dive into today's guest, I want to talk just a little bit about something that's kind of been on my mind the last couple of days. People say you never know how much time you have, and you never know when it might be the last time you see somebody. And what's interesting to me in particular is that I have practiced acting on my instincts to love on people for many, many years, not in the creepy way, but I have no beef saying to people, hey, I really appreciate you. I love you. I see you. I think you're amazing. That's a really cool shirt. I've been that way a really, really long time, and I don't hold anything back. And when people talk about, you never know when you're going to see someone for the last time, you never know when you might have the last chance to say something, they usually frame that to be encouraging, but in the context of avoiding regret. And I'm not one who's motivated by avoiding things. I'm motivated by going to things. And I want to offer you today a reframe on that. And instead of avoiding regret, I would encourage you to embrace peace and to embrace the benefit of being who you are and telling people that you care about them and telling them that you love them and giving them hugs and whatever. And if people receive it, they receive it. And if they don't, that's up to them. But you have put goodness out into the world. And I just believe that. And there's a story behind that that I can't quite say. I thought I could tell you about it, but I think I'm going to have to hold that to the next episode because I'm a little choked up already. But no, there is a reason I'm sharing this with you. So say the thing, give the hug, make the time, and do it selfishly. Who cares if they receive it the way you intend? Do it because it makes you feel good and you're driving toward peace and you're not running from regret. All right. So there you go. That's it for that. Now, I'm so excited because this woman's smile lights up a freaking room and it's going to be such a great conversation. Katrina Stroll is a United States Navy veteran. And I say U.S. Navy because we're a global community. I love being able to say that. So she is a U.S. Navy veteran, and she served as an aviation structural mechanic. I don't even know what that is, but it sounds really complicated, and I have a huge admiration for that. Well, what's interesting to me, and this is actually one of the reasons I originally kind of started following her, was I saw something she had posted on LinkedIn. She transitioned her career, and over the last 10 years, she's actually been in human resources because she has a passion for psychological safety. And she takes her commitment to serving others and has used that to create psychological safety through her role in human resources. Now, in 2018, Katrina decided to take her own life after internalizing behavior of a toxic workplace. And you guys know how passionate I am about suicide prevention. So she and I bonded over that a little bit when we spoke earlier. Since then, obviously, she was not successful, and I'm super grateful for that. Since then, she's become a huge advocate of mental health, and she works to reduce the stigma through her podcast, which you need to go check out. It's called Absolutely Not. And it's a weekly live podcast that's dedicated to providing examples of setting personal boundaries at work. I don't know about you guys, but a lot of times when I hear about the talk of boundaries, it's really in the context of romantic relationships or friendships. But really, boundaries are set in all relationships. And I love that she's focusing her work in this area. What she's also doing, though, and you guys know I'm a logophile, huge word person, she is helping create vocabulary to name harm in those spaces. I'm so excited to introduce the Encourage Project community to Katrina Stroll. Welcome.
I'm so happy to be here. That was amazing, by the way. Smooth.
Thank you. I'm so happy you're here. We were talking before. She lives in Texas. I live in Arkansas. For those outside of the United States, we're in the southern part of the U.S., and we don't normally get to wear sweatshirts, but she and I both showed up in sweatshirts today because it's so cold and lovely and fall-ish outside. So welcome. Before we dive into all the cool things that I mentioned, tell us a little bit about you. Let the community learn a little bit about you and who you are.
So thank you for that amazing intro. It really covers all the bases of who I am. But I'd also like to point out that I am a mom. I'm queer. I'm a part of a lot of identities, or I cover a lot of identities, which is why I'm so passionate about psychological safety, because it looks so different for all of the identities that I'm a part of, or the communities and groups that I'm a part of. Someone's boundary could look so different from one Black person to the next Black person. And I just need people to understand that. So when I say I'm really passionate about psychological safety, I am.
I love it. You said you're a mom. How many kids do you have? Just out of curiosity.
I only have one child, and I think I'm done. Don't, like, please don't let that be a jinx. But I think
that's amazing. Let's dive into the whole career initial part that got me kind of connected with you over LinkedIn. I don't even know how to ask this question. You know, you had this really, I find that fascinating that you had a career in the United States Navy. I'm a super huge supporter of military people. I come from a military family, really huge supporter. And I find it fascinating all the different roles that you can have in the military. I don't know. Maybe I'm just weird that way, but I like it. So how did you get into that? How did you get into aviation and then becoming a structural mechanic in aviation? Tell us about how that path kind of presented itself.
So I was in college for civil engineering and I ran out of money.
Oh, wow.
So I called every military recruiter I can, because I grew up in a very big military family. And I knew, okay, that's a way to make money. That's get college paid. The first recruiter to answer was the Navy recruiter. And they tried to get me to become, I think, an information technology something specialist, but it wasn't leaving for 6 months. Then they're like, this one leaves in 2 weeks. And it was aviation structural mechanic. And I was like, yeah, let me get that one.
So wow. Talk about fast decisions. Holy cow. So then you spent a career, the first part of your career in the service, and then you transitioned into HR. I mean, obviously human resources is vastly different than engineering and being a mechanic. How did that happen?
So while I was in the military, like you said, the military allows for their personnel to wear several hats. And in fact, they encourage it, because one person doing 60 million things, what could go wrong? But while I was an aviation mechanic, I took on the role as an HR specialist and a career development specialist, about 150 sailors. And I fell madly in love with the idea of helping people be able to develop in the careers that they want to be in, and just asking them, what can I do to help you and assist you on your journey? When I was transitioning out of the military, I'll start by saying, when you transition out of the military, the people that are giving you the information are also people who are transitioning from the military. So those people told me, hey, HR would be great for you. Like, those two dots go together. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got into HR.
Wow. Wow. And I love that you found something of a purpose, if you will, in helping people navigate their careers. You know, we talk a lot here at the Encourage Project about the difference between passion and purpose, and how the things that you're passionate about can sometimes fuel purpose, and that people can have more than one purpose in a lifetime. And I'm definitely under the impression that you've had at least three that I can kind of see shining throughout what little I know about you. But I love that you found this first kind of, or may not have been the first, but you found this purpose in helping people navigate their careers. So is that what you also did when you transitioned out of the military? Did you continue to kind of be on that path of career coaching, if you will, for lack of a better description?
I did not. I let it go. I believed everything that other people were telling me, like, no, that's HR. You need to do that instead. And I went into various HR roles. I became an HR business partner for a really large medical company. And I was just like, great. I fucking hate this.
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So, I mean, what do you do at that point? What did you do?
So I immediately went back to the drawing board and said, okay, how did we get these two dots? Remember, we're talking about the two dots. And then I remembered, oh, those were messages I received from other people who, one, are no longer in my life. Like, I don't even, and two, who had very little information on me. They just knew I was a transitioning person who was interested in very small amounts of information that they had on me. And it's like, cool, that dot connects with that dot. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, that's the military in a nutshell. That's all that to just connect two dots as quickly as possible without really digging more into the situation.
Wow. So, you know, certainly having come to that realization, I can imagine that that made you exponentially more valuable in your new roles as you continued through your career. I mean, having that insight to know that it's more than just the surface things on let's say a resume about a person, it's much more than the dots on a resume that really connect a person to a career path. And so how did you kind of leverage that realization and that insight that a lot of people wouldn't get right away to navigate into the next evolution of your career?
It's really the development of myself. My ability to pour more into myself and my own development ensured that I was doing the same with the people that were on my teams or that I was leading or the organization I was a part of. I am bettering myself and I expect y'all to do the same. So I guess that made me an asset. Some of the organizations I was a part of did not see it that way. So here we are, entrepreneurship.
What I love about what you said is essentially this phrase that I hear all the time and I kind of roll my eyes because it is overused, but it's very true. You cannot pour into others if you do not fill your own cup. You can't until you serve yourself and make yourself the best version of you that you can be in that moment. You really don't have much to give or much to offer other people. Mm-hmm. And you also bring up a point that organizations sometimes don't like it when we work on ourselves. Because it can feel threatening to them, I think, at least in my experience in the corporate gig, you know, the times when I was investing in me and really growing into what I consider my full potential in roles, it created something that people were like, oh, wow, what do we do with her? You know, how do we manage that? And how do we create opportunities for this person who's really self-motivated and that kind of stuff? Talk a little bit about that. Did you bump up against that? Obviously you did, but talk a little bit about that.
Oh, what I hate the most about what you said is how do we manage that? As soon as you start to see your leadership team or your managers, and here's the word I'm going to use because they become intimidated by the fact that, or whatever structure you're a part of, and they think the only possibility that's there is you are going to take their job. There couldn't be any other possibility, like I'm going to continue to contribute to the team. We may become partners in this or become collaborators that we're creating. No, you are going to take my job. I don't know what else to do with you.
Yes.
So yeah, pretty fun to process all that also while working.
Yes. And it's interesting, you know, particularly as leaders, I work with leaders one-on-one pretty frequently. And I often hear the manage, how do I manage this high-performing employee as an example? I'm like, you don't. You manage tasks and you lead people. How do you lead that person to their greatness? And how do you leverage them selfishly, you know, for your own betterment, for the betterment of your team? I think, wouldn't it be great if one of the first things we taught leaders when they become leaders is, hey, you're a leader because you don't know everything. You're good at getting people to move in a direction and you're good at getting people who do know the things to collaborate, you know? Wouldn't it be great if we could teach them that right off the bat?
And then you'd be able to kind of realize like who is cultivating this fear of I'm going to lose my job, or this person is becoming too large for me to manage. Like, you're a leader for a reason. Whoever you are, lead them.
Yes. Yes. I think in my experience, it has been what I would consider scarcity mindset. Mm-hmm. There are only so many manager roles. I put that in air quotes, right? Only so many manager roles. Therefore, I must hold on tightly to the one that I have because no one else should get it. And I have found through my own leadership experiences, the more I create the abundance mindset of, hey, I don't know how many roles there are, but there's a whole lot of opportunity for us to be successful. There's opportunity for us to build great teams and great relationships with customers and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It just seemed to make everything run more smoothly. What do you think?
Oh, so much more smoothly. And that person, I promise you, even if they are thinking about taking your job, then you think about the abundance that's out there in the world. Okay, cool. Kathy is gunning for my job. Maybe I should start looking elsewhere or talk to my leadership team about, like, how can I prevent that? Or how can we all work together collaboratively so Kathy can lead a team of her own?
Yes.
Oh, y'all need to start asking the right questions instead of just, how can I manage this person?
Yes. Oh my gosh. So much yes. So much yes. Oh, I could go on that forever. There's one more thing I want to say about it though, and then we can move on. It is, you know, I would encourage leaders, you want people who want your job. You know, you want people who want something more. Not that, now let me be very clear. It is perfectly okay to love the role that you're in and do that to absolute excellence and not want something more. That is absolutely perfect and wonderful. And it is also really wonderful to hire people who want to elevate themselves in the organization, who want to move on to different roles. I think it's beautiful. I always wanted people who wanted my job or who at least wanted to be the very, very best at the things that they did, you know? Mm-hmm. It'd be cool.
Ooh,
but like as an entrepreneur, you know, no, I'm looking around. There's nobody else in my office right now. So nobody wants my job right now, but that's fine. So let's talk a little bit about how you began to really hone in your focus and your gifts to the world by focusing on psychological safety. I will tell you, until I started following you on LinkedIn and until you and I talked a couple of weeks ago, I knew it existed, but I didn't know people, it was actually a thing. It was actually, there were people like you in the world who were actually doing this really, really important work. I just didn't know. And it's so beautiful and serendipitous that we met as far as that is concerned, because I feel so grateful to have this enlightenment around it. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about how you've changed your focus to really hone in on the psychological safety, particularly in the workplace.
I had to focus more because I was getting tired. Mm-hmm. I have mental health conditions. And so during orientation or during interviews, I have to talk about my mental health conditions and this is what I need, or these are the type of accessibility I need. I will need this to be productive. But nowhere under the umbrella of HR did, like, oh, sure, go talk to this person and they will help you to make sure that you have the accessibility you need, that you have the accommodations you need. And it's all under the umbrella of HR, but there was no specific person. And then I really tied in psychological safety because as an aviation mechanic, we are definitely told all the time, this is what you need to be safe when you're working on this job. This is what you need to be safe if you're doing anything around the aircraft. But that type of safety and kind of precaution and laid out for word, this is what you need to be safe, was not transferred as far as mental health or psychological safety in the workplace. No one gives a shit until someone breaks down in the workplace and like, oh my gosh, how did we get here? I feel like we had all the proper PPE. No, y'all did not. And you have not been using it. When was the last time someone inspected this place for safety or up to code?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think that's fantastic. And you're absolutely right. And as you're saying that, I'm thinking I spent time in gold mining. I worked for a gold mining company. And every single meeting, we began the meeting with what was called a safety share, right? And so you're absolutely right. I learned all kinds of things about my physical safety, the safety of our buildings, the safety of information, the safety of trade secrets. But never was I encouraged, educated, or discussed with anything having to do with psychological safety. And you're right, organizations don't even talk about it, or frankly, I don't feel as if they actively acknowledge it until shit blows up. Someone creates an unfortunate situation, and I know that's an understatement, but creates an unfortunate situation where then we kind of go, oh, well, what the hell, you know? How has that been received? You know, because like I mentioned, it's not actively pursued in organizations that I'm aware of, even that I've been a part of. I know it exists, but none of the ones I've ever been a part of had it. So how has that been received by organizations as you've focused on that and brought awareness to it?
So it's been received with the amount of acceptance I would expect it to be received with. Just like very much like, oh, that sounds great, but it doesn't sound, what is ROI? It doesn't sound like we're going to get a return of investment on it. We're already fine. Kathy did break down the other day, but she's fine now. So we probably don't need your services. And if we do, it'll probably be for a very short amount of time.
Wow. Wow. Isn't that interesting? You know, and it's similar, frankly, and I know I'm about to throw a turd in the punch bowl. It's similar, frankly, to diversity, equity, inclusion, you know, in terms of how organizations, at least in recent history, have embraced or not in ways that they felt truly compelled to embrace. Do you think that it's getting easier? Or do you think corporations or organizations that you work with or that you want to work with, are they more open now than they were a year ago? Do you think it's getting easier to discuss or easier to get people to see the value?
I think it's getting easier to say what I do and people not just be thrown aback, not really for them to accept or discuss, but for people, oh, I've heard that before. Like, okay, you're one of those people. I think that's the part that's getting easier. But once again, just like you said, a year and a half ago, that big umbrella of HR, diversity and inclusion, was somewhere under there. There's just so many things that organizations and corporations are starting to realize, holy shit, these people that work for us need more than what we were providing them with.
Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, I mentioned in the bio, part of your personal story really, I'm under the impression that it played into your choice to create this focus in your career. Are you comfortable telling us a little bit about that situation in 2018 and how that may have played into what you do today?
Mm-hmm. So in 2018, and I really have to rephrase this, but in 2018, I decided to take my own life multiple times after an organization that I was a part of just could not meet my needs or expectations. And I internalized that by saying, oh, wow, I must be a really shitty employee. Therefore, I'm a really shitty person and I should not be allowed to continue living on this earth. I think a lot of my work comes from that experience. I just want a lot of employees to know that those two things are not the same. Your value and your worth does not come from the work or the labor that you provide to the organization you're a part of, and you're allowed to have the expectations that you need to have.
Wow. I love that so much. I think one of the really key points that you mentioned, though, is separating our worth in our, I'll call it our corporate label, if you will, you know, and frankly, it's difficult to do. It is very, very difficult, at least in the, I can only speak to having been raised in the United States, but in the United States, many of us are taught you get out of high school, you go get an education, you go get a career, you work for a company, you do all the things and you'll make money and you'll buy a house and all whatever. This is how your life will go. And we are either intentionally or unintentionally, at least I was, ingrained to embrace and love the titles and the awards and the bonuses and the perks. And really, it's very easy, or at least it was for me, to wrap my value in that. And when I left that 2 years ago, when I left corporate America 2 years ago, there was a period of time where I'm like, who the hell am I? You know, here I was, I had this title and I had these things and I'd worked for these companies and whatever. And so I can only imagine if companies and organizations are not consciously aware of that natural tendency for us, particularly in the United States, to associate a portion of our worth, if not all of it for some people, with the perceived value we provide an organization. If they're not consciously aware of that, they can be inadvertently creating a whole lot of distress for people, you know? Wow. And so if we know that that exists, how would you encourage someone to get curious about how wound up they are with that entanglement of worth and to start to explore where their worth truly lies?
And that's where my work around boundaries comes in. I'm really telling people to make sure there's a start and stop to your work, especially people who have now been working from home for the past two years now.
Yeah.
That fine line that used to be in the sand. And if you didn't even have that before, even more so, there's no line anymore. It's just people call you at 10 p.m. People, oh, I sent an email because I'm up. No, your ability to tell those people, hey, this is where I stop, even if I'm working from home, even though you can see inside my living room, I won't be doing that. That really extracts your worth from your work and enables you to tell yourself on a daily basis that you're choosing yourself first.
Wow. I love that. You know, I have experienced organizations that unintentionally award really harmful behaviors. You know, lots of IT organizations, for example, oh man, we were working till 2 a.m. to get this thing out the door. And, you know, we've been doing that for 6 days straight. And then they get a bonus for that. And so we've inadvertently rewarded a harmful behavior rather than taking those bonuses and hiring more people so that the people we have aren't working till 2 a.m. Right. So if those things exist, how do you begin to work with an organization to create the organizational awareness that there even is a problem that needs to be at least looked at?
So my inspections or assessments include three different, different compartments. And it goes from communication to policies to relationships. So the dynamics that you have in between those relationships, how are you communicating? Are your policies rewarding people for not taking their PTO, for not setting boundaries? Are your policies, are your policies not rewarding people for standing up against discrimination? All of those things I need to know about before being able to assess whether or not you're creating a psychologically safe environment. And more often than not, a lot of people don't have the answers to those questions.
Yeah. Well, I think they don't know the questions exist. I mean, because we've done it the way we've always done it. The organization is set up this way. We have policies. We follow the policies. And that's how it goes. I find it fascinating. It makes sense to me. I understand why it is the way it is. I also understand how organizations and people may just not be aware yet. So I find it really, really interesting that you help create awareness that there even could be a problem. Or if there's not a problem yet, that there may be in the future and there are things that can be done now to help mitigate any risk associated with those things in the future. I want to shift gears just a little bit because you've mentioned that you have mental health support requirements in a workplace. And so to me, that implies that there are certain things that you are consciously aware of in your mental wellness. I wonder, as you've gone through these big transitions in your career and also created this new way of looking at things for others, what kinds of habits have you created for yourself to help you maintain your focus and maintain your being as centered as you can more often than not? People are always curious about the habits that extraordinary folks like you have. So tell us a little bit about some of the habits that you have to kind of keep you more you.
So I will start by saying my mental health conditions are post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, major depressive disorder, and a secondary alcoholism disorder. Because of these multiple mental health conditions, I have to keep it in line all the time. And if I don't, it could be really drastic to everything I'm about. And yeah, we won't even get there. But y'all have heard how drastic it can go.
Sure.
So the things that I help myself is journaling, creating an agenda for the day. Because of my mental health conditions, I can really easily feel like I have not accomplished anything and I'm a piece of shit and this is not working out. We should definitely run back to corporate America. So I have to make sure I have checklists and said, wow, look how much we did today. And when I complete that checklist, I tell myself those things. Wow, look how much you did today. Good job. I'm so proud of you. And we didn't even cry today. And I've recently started recording those meetings, those end of the day meetings with myself, just saying, wow, you are awesome. You're kicking ass. We are touching the people that we want to touch. I'm so grateful that you're doing this work, because we're not going to get that externally every day. And honestly, we should be getting it internally first. But I will also end that with the people that I do work with. I have set boundaries in how I want to be treated very specifically. One of the major boundaries I set with is I will not go into a meeting if I don't have an agenda prior to the meeting. I just can't. I don't like not knowing what we're going to talk about. I don't like not knowing who's going to be there. I've had too many bad experiences with that, and I refuse to.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. I can imagine. And I haven't had nearly what you have, and I can imagine. So, a couple of things I love about your habits, the journaling. I want to hear a little bit more about that. And then I also want to talk about how you celebrate yourself. I love that so much. But tell me a little bit about the journaling. Is that a gratitude thing? Is it a free flow thing? Tell me a little bit about your journaling.
So I journal first thing in the morning. I look at my calendar of meetings that I have today, and I kind of write down how I feel about each of those meetings. Like, oh shit, we have that client today. I feel like shit. I really don't want to talk to them. But guess what? We got this and we can do it. Make sure that we have this lined up and we should be able to get through the meeting. Mm-hmm. Then my next meeting and so on and so forth. So it's really keeping track of how I feel that day and how we're going to attack the things that we know are really going to bump up against what we want to do that day.
Mm-hmm. I love that you record the end of the day. I call them celebrations. I'm a huge celebration fan. I always ask about it. And I didn't even have to ask you, you do it. What I love even more is that you record it. Do you ever go back and listen multiple times to your recordings about how great you are?
So 2 weeks ago, I had to do a project or something, and it's a documentary on depression. Mm-hmm. And I was included in a documentary on depression. And that day, that celebration video was just me crying and just me really saying, like, we were not going to be here. Like 3 years ago, we were not going to be here. And that one, I can only watch maybe one time seconds of it. Sure. But yeah, I definitely go back to it.
Oh, I love that so much. What I also love is that, you know, people think celebration has to be big and super happy over the edge and confetti and stuff. And sometimes it's just like you said, it's acknowledging I'm here. That is something to friggin' celebrate, frankly. So people, I'm going to say it again. I say it all the time. Celebration is acknowledging where you are and the progress that you're making. It doesn't have to be all sparkles, but it has to be conscious. I really believe in that. So thank you for saying that. Oh, it makes me happy. And of course, I'm getting all choked up. Yeah, use my sweatshirt, wipe my tears here. Okay. All right. So next. So we talked a little bit about the career stuff and I just now lost my words. She's giving me the big thumbs up. Like, see, we're bonded now. So you said you're in a documentary recently. What other kinds of projects like that are you doing, or are you doing other projects in addition to this amazing work that you do? Where can people find out more about you?
So all of my projects are speaking engagements can be found on my website, www.katrinastroll.com. I am starting to speak more about my mental health conditions because I think people don't have enough representation of just badass people saying, yeah. Hey, I also have mental health conditions, but I don't give a shit because I'm maintaining them on a daily basis and you will respect me nonetheless.
Yeah, I love that. Do you find that as you have become more open, like you said, about all the identities that you associate with and also your mental health conditions, have you found that people are really embracing that in ways that you didn't expect?
Oh my gosh, I hate that question. I hate it so much. there are so many parts of my journey that I was so afraid to talk about, especially the suicide attempts, which is why I had to shove it in my bio. So yeah. Many times in interviews, I'd be like, great, I can talk about suicide in this. And I would just not. I would just skip it over. And now I don't give myself the opportunity. It is right there and we're definitely going to talk about it. So yes, so many people have immediately said, wow, I had no idea. And I really appreciate you talking about it.
I love it. I love that you shared that. And I love that you're still open with that. You know, I mentioned that was one of the things that we kind of connected on when we spoke before today, because my brother committed suicide. And the whole thing that Katrina just mentioned about, I've said this before, there is someone on this earth who needs your shine. And you may not know who that person is, but someone needs you to speak out on the thing that you think is the most difficult thing to speak out on, because they need to hear that someone else has gone through it. And I get that it's scary and I get that it could take a long time, but Katrina is proof of it. I'm proof of it. Every guest we've had on the Encourage Project is proof that there is someone in this world who needs your shine. So there you go, folks. You need to find it and work your very damnedest to get it out there so that people can see it and embrace it and love on you for it. There you go. Okay, so that's my soapbox on that. And now, again, Katrina and I are both crying. All right. So this has been amazing on so many levels. I love talking to you about the military and the corporate work and the cool things that you're doing in public speaking. And I just love the joy that you bring to this world and the light that you shine, my friend. Tell folks how they can get in touch with you if they want to say hi or they want to learn more specifically or they want to hook up and say, hey, let's have a virtual coffee like I did. tell them how to do that.
On LinkedIn most of the days. I'm really trying to limit that, but it's part of the job. So I'm definitely on LinkedIn all of the time, but my website has everything that I talk about on a weekly basis, on a daily basis. So go ahead and check it out.
Perfect. And I'll put all that in the show notes, folks. Her videos, I just love them. So yeah, you got to check those out. I'll put all that in the show notes. So that's it for this edition, friends. Oh my gosh, what an amazing insight Katrina has brought us today. You know, and I mentioned at the beginning something, and as you get ready to hit stop today and you get ready to get on with your day, what's one action you can take before the day is over? And today I encourage you to say the thing. Say the thing, give the hug. Who cares what they think of you or how they receive it? The fact is, it's a gift that you are sharing with someone. And do it not because you may regret not doing it, but because it will bring you so much peace to do it. And you will have joy as a result, I promise you. And I will tell you more about that when I can get through it. So as you go into reflection today, the ahas, the oh no's, and the yippies, if you're new and you don't know what that is, the ahas are, what'd you learn or what insights did you get? The oh no's are, oh my gosh, what questions do you have or what do you want more information about? And the yippies are, what can you celebrate? Today, I want to encourage you to consider what boundaries you may need to set in your work relationships or in your work environment. And maybe you've never even considered that that was a possibility. Like I said, I mean, I always thought about boundaries in the context of my interpersonal, you know, personal relationships. So think about what boundaries might you need to set in your work environment. So there you go, friends. That's it for this edition. Let's continue the conversation. You can go to our website. You can go to theencourageproject.com. You can find us on Instagram at @the_encourage_project. And you can always get in touch with me at hello@theencourageproject.com. Be safe, be well, friends, and shine.